Good morning. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is January the 3rd, 2021. So this is my first podcast of 2021. And today I have a guest who is, I think, perfect to start off the year. I'm going to be speaking with Peter, who is a retired English solicitor, meaning lawyer, who has had the experience of being married to a U.S. citizen or a U.S. born individual, and has had to deal for the last 10 years or so with the problems of citizenship-based taxation. In other words, the claim of the United States that it can impose worldwide taxation on his wife, who appears to have no connection to the United States, but for a place of birth. And this is, I think, a particularly timely and interesting podcast because it takes place while the Accidental Americans Association, for example, has just launched a lawsuit against the State Department complaining about the $2,350 renunciation fee. We also have, interestingly, last week, a court in the Netherlands holding that a U.S.-born pilot was required to comply with the FATCA rules, whatever those may be. So the ongoing U.S. assault on the tax residents of other countries continues unabated. And I'm pleased to be joined today by Peter to discuss these issues. How are you today, Peter?
Absolutely fine, John, and I hope you are too.
All is good here, and you were in lockdown in London, are you?
Lockdown? Are you in lockdown?
Supposedly, but apparently my life is just always in lockdown no matter what. I'm not personally experiencing the difference other than some of the small stores that I like to go to are closed. But definitely it's a different world than it was December 3rd, 2020. There's no doubt about that.
It certainly is. Certainly is.
So, Peter, you sent me an email earlier in the week that I thought was interesting, and you were commenting on the Accidental Americans lawsuit against the State Department, and the point that you made, I think, bears repeating. And you were really talking about how there's a large group of people that are at least theoretically affected by this who really don't seem to get a lot of press time. And I wonder if you can elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, sure, John. Well, the term accidental American is one that's used quite a bit in the context of this whole FATCA and American tax saga. And what I understand we mean by an accidental American is someone who is a US citizen, but has only ever had, at the most, a tenuous connection with the US. And when people use this term, mainly they seem to think of people who were born in the US, probably to non-US parents, and the family moved away from the US back home after a short time. So the child only lived in America for a very short period of time. And a most famous recent example of that is Boris Johnson, our esteemed prime minister. But there's another group of citizens who don't seem to get talked about at all. And those are US citizens who were born to a US parent outside the US. So take our family situation. I'm a UK citizen. My wife's a US citizen. We've lived our married life in the UK and we've had two children. And those two children, by descent from my wife, get American citizenship. And those are the people we're talking about. Not born in the US, born outside the US, but nevertheless have US citizenship because one of their parents was a US citizen. And so that's who I'm talking about, John. And there are lots of these people, as far as I can tell.
Well, it's potentially a massive group of people. And if we were to use the analogy of, say, an iceberg, as you describe that, you know, I'm thinking of the movie Titanic, as the Titanic is heading towards the iceberg and sees only the tip of it. And what is below the ocean, which is less, which is not visible, is a far, far greater part of that ice mass. So it's, I think, it's probably like that. Because look, if a U.S. citizen born in the U.S. were to move abroad, marry as your wife did, and have children, that would be certainly, well, you know, it's more than one. You know, if she has multiple children or whatever, then that's a larger number of people who are theoretically affected by these rules.
That's absolutely right. So it's a bit like COVID, John, really. My wife was infected with the US tax germ, as it were, and she passes it on to each of my children. So that's another two. There was a sitcom in the UK here called 2.4 Children. And the reason for that was that 2.4 children is the average number of children that a family has in the UK. So one's looking at multiplying by 2.4, if you like, on the US citizens who have moved abroad for love, if you like. So if you take the number of citizens who have moved abroad to marry, multiply that by 2.4, certainly for the UK, you've probably got something like the number of accidental Americans of this type two, as I might call them.
Right. Now, the advantage that they have in an FR and FATCA world would be that they presumably move around the world with a degree of anonymity because they do not have a U.S. birthplace. So although there are probably more what we would call accidental Americans born outside the United States, the ones who were born in the United States are likely to be identified, or more likely to be identified.
Well, that's true up to a point. But of course, these days, if you want to have a bank account or a financial account or of any sort, nowadays you're asked whether you are a US citizen. And I wouldn't advocate lying about it. So in fact, they're probably not so anonymous as they might have been before the age of mass communication, when you know, these things could be kept much easier tabs on than years ago.
Right. So this, I mean, it certainly underscores the point, though, that what citizenship taxation really is defining tax residents of other countries with no connection to the United States as tax residents of the United States, right?
Yeah, well, what U.S. taxation is doing, is it's not actually defining them as tax residents, is it? What it's doing is saying it doesn't matter that you're not resident, you're still paying us tax because we're taxing you as a citizen, not as a resident.
Yeah, that's what I mean by tax resident.
Well, yeah.
Meaning just subject to full worldwide taxation.
Yeah, but I think it's important to be precise about exactly the way that the thing works. And one of my points about it is the effect on individuals is really important, but also it's the effect on the economies of other countries who are having their economies ransacked, if you like, by America for money, which has been generated in those other economies, not in America.
You know, Peter, a lot of Americans would consider the statement that you just made to be an absolutely outrageous fabrication at best, and at worst, deliberate distortion of reality.
In what way?
Can you explain how exactly, in your view, by requiring residents of, say, the UK to be subject to the US tax code and subject to US worldwide taxation, how that ransacks the UK economy?
Well, first of all, I think one wants to go back to what the fundamentals of tax are, certainly personal taxations on individuals. And generally speaking, it seems to me, what it is when you live in, say, America as an individual, the government taxes you on your income, generated in the US economy to take a part of the output of the US economy to finance government activities. That's absolutely fine. But in imposing worldwide citizenship taxation, what America is doing is going into other countries and taking part of the output of those economies to finance America, money that America has done nothing to earn and was not generated in the US economy. And it's rather like the squire in the manor house, bearing in mind America's already the richest country in the world. It's like the squire in the manor house going down into the village and taking money from the villagers to finance his activities. Just doesn't seem right to me. And the other aspect of this as well is that on a more subtle level, the tax code of a country is a plan for managing the economy of the company and the country and the finances of the country. And that involves making policy choices which have societal implications. And when America comes along and says, well, for example, you in Britain don't tax the principal private residence of citizens. Nevertheless, America does. And therefore, if you're a US citizen, we want part of the profit from the sale of your house in the UK. That is undermining that societal policy decision that the UK government has taken as to what should happen.
You know, you make two interesting points, and I'd like to just repeat them at this juncture in the conversation. Okay, the first point that you're making, if I'm understanding you correctly, is that basically by doing this, the United States is sort of taking money from individuals that they're not entitled to, no connection to the United States, etc. The second point you're making is that, hey, this goes way beyond the damage to individuals. What it really does is interferes with the sovereign right of these other countries to manage their economies in the way that they want to. Have I got that right?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And as far as the individuals are concerned, it's not so much the citizenship that's the problem. It's the citizenship-based taxation that's the problem. I mean, pretty well every country in the world bases citizenship on two things, either being born in the country or, although born outside of the country.
Some form of descent.
So there's nothing wrong with that. That's what most countries do. The US is not exceptional in doing that. Where it is exceptional is in imposing on those people citizenship taxation, which other countries don't do. So that's the problem, really, not the citizenship side of things.
Okay. So now to repeat that, all right. So the US is doing nothing unusual with regard to how it confers citizenship, nothing unusual at all. All right. But what is unusual and the problem is the US government use of that citizenship to essentially extract revenue from other countries.
Exactly. You summarize it very well.
Okay. Now, you know, you obviously have thought about this a lot. You've clearly been involved in this for a long time. And so I am assuming that that you tend to read the ongoing commentary about this type of stuff. So you have, for example, certain politicians who would say, well, what's the problem here? Every country has the right to define who its citizens are, and every country has the right to have its own tax rules. So there's certainly nothing wrong at all with the United States imposing worldwide taxation on, say, a resident of Italy or the UK. It seems to me that those two statements are true, but collectively they become ridiculous. So one, it is true that every country can define who its citizens are. It's also true that every country has the right to have its own tax code. But what I don't think is true is that any country can use points one and two impose taxation on people in other countries. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, entirely agree with that. Yeah, that's absolutely spot on.
What is it that these politicians don't understand about that? Why are they so, well, what's the problem here? I mean, you get the feeling listening to some of these politicians that any objection to this at all is actually an affront, an assault on America's sovereignty to define who its citizens are and what its tax laws should be.
And certainly that if as an American you said it, it would be deemed highly unpatriotic by these people, wouldn't it? I think the problem with them is that probably they have an element of the American exceptionalism about them, that really these citizens should be jolly grateful that they're being taxed by America and that it's all part of their contribution to the American community as they would see it. In fact, I think that's how it's been put by some people. And that anybody who's American should be grateful and should be delighted to contribute their money to it. And I think a lot of them have never been on the, none of them probably have ever been on the receiving end of this and seen the practical effects of it. And if they did see the practical effects of this on their own ability to lead a normal financial life, they might see things a little differently. But none of them have had that.
Well, I think that the one of the problems here, and this is a point that I've been making for many years, is this, that the effect of the, on the one hand, one can say there is one internal revenue code. And, you know, like in 17th century France, the saying, the law and its majestic equality prohibits both the rich and the poor from sleeping on the park bench. The problem with the Internal Revenue Code is that it imposes very punitive taxation, reporting, and penalties with respect to any economic activity that is not, that doesn't take place within the United States. The result of that is that Americans abroad, those defined as U.S. citizens who are living in and are tax residents of other countries, are not only subjected U.S. worldwide taxation, but they are subjected to a version of it that is far more punitive and is really different from the version that homeland Americans are subjected to.
That's absolutely right. Certainly, the IRS code regards anything as that's foreign with the deepest suspicion, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, do you know, Peter, that the decision of your wife to marry you, a U.S. citizen marrying, I presume you're a British citizen, is treated in the Internal Revenue Code as a form of tax evasion?
Yeah, quite. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
was that what was actually going on when you married your wife? She was trying to evade U.S. taxation?
Do you know, I never knew it. She didn't marry me for love at all. I'm only just realizing it, John.
You know, you were a tax shelter, Peter.
That was it.
But I mean, you know, the point that you make about the U.S. tax laws treating anything that's foreign with suspicion is absolutely right. In fact, the way I used to put it is that if you see the word foreign in the Internal Revenue Code, the word penalty is sure to follow.
Yeah.
Usually starting at about $10,000. And of course, the real problem is, given the complexity of these laws, the only thing anybody can understand is the penalty provision.
Well, certainly the IRS seem to understand them very well by imposing them, don't they? But the penalties, we joke about them, but they can be utterly ruinous, can't they? If they decide you are willful, then they
They can be ultimately ruinous. I think, you know, and this is just my, I recognize this is my personal perspective on this, but I will offer it anyway. I think that when it comes to tax laws, I think that people should have a fundamental right to understand what's required of them. And if you don't have that in tax system, you've got, I think, an illegitimate tax system for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the U.S. tax system is that it is for Americans, or at least the way it's applied to them, utterly incomprehensible. So there are many situations where, you know, there are people want to comply, or rather, well, they want to be compliant. Okay, if I can put it that way, they want to be compliant. They just don't know how. Mm-hmm. This is so complex. They look to the left, there's a penalty. They look to the right, there's a penalty. I mean, I guess somebody right now desperately wants to comply. you know, he wasn't filing tax returns for, there's no tax owing, but there are some information returns.
Yeah.
He wants to file the information returns. He's faced with, you know, 3 years of $10,000 penalties if he does this for amounts that are about $5,000 per year. I mean, what are people supposed to do?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, with the FBARs, if you move money from one account to another in the same year, then the same amount of money will appear twice on your total FBAR reckoning, won't it? So it can always, it can look as if you've got a lot more money than you actually have. So the whole thing is completely ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous for many reasons. I mean, first of all, the FBAR, it's now called FinCEN 114, is extraordinary because this is a form that is filed with the Financial Crimes Division of U.S. Yeah. Treasury. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Somebody born outside the United States trying to comply with this. The place you go to comply is with U.S. Treasury financial crimes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah.
as though you're a presumptive criminal.
Yeah, yeah.
Secondly, one of the things that I find amazing about FBAR is that the actual FBAR statute is very short. What it does is essentially delegates to Treasury to do everything, including the $10,000 amount, which has not changed for, you know, 40 some years.
Yeah, yeah.
So through inflation, more and more people have become subject to the FBAR requirement, so to speak. They haven't bothered to change the reporting threshold. Interestingly, Congress has written a law that would subject the penalties to inflation increases.
Yes.
So, you know, their misuse of the reality of inflation is practically criminal.
Yeah, yeah.
So inflation makes more people subject to the requirement, but it also allows them to impose penalties that are higher because of inflation.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a truly amazing thing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I mean, does your wife regard her UK bank account down the street as a foreign account?
Well, quite. It's ludicrous, isn't it? Where else would you bank? It's mad. But go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, you know, so I've used the same bank for years. You know, I go down the street and, you know, if I'm feeling lonely, the people in the bank know me. Hi, John, how are you today? You know, I mean, it's the opposite form. Yeah. I mean, it's a community social place where I can get a cup of coffee.
And also, where else would you have your pension plan but in the country you actually live in?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. And this is another area of, I mean, this just so cries out for reform. I mean, in the UK and Canada, at least the tax treaties recognize, you know, the reality that American citizens living in these countries might have a pension, but there are other countries, for example, Australia, that has, you know, no treatment of that in their tax treaty at all. So if you think things are bad in the UK or Canada, just try going to Australia.
Not just at the moment. They wouldn't let me in.
Right. But, you know, it is just a terrible problem. So, you know, that example, I think, illustrates another fascinating principle about this, which is that when you look at, it's one thing to say, all right, so the United States imposes worldwide taxation on those who it considers to be its citizens living outside the United States. All right. What's interesting is that the kind of taxation they're subjected to depends on what country they live in.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so much of this is driven by the existing, you know, by the tax treaties between those countries. For example, you know, to use some very mundane examples, but I think they small examples would be illustrative of some of the larger ones as well. If you look at, for example, the taxation of U.S. Social Security. People who live in France, taxable only by the U.S. People who live in Canada, taxable only by Canada, right?
Mm.
Well, so you mean you have a range of rules that are, you know, that are just so, so country dependent. And, you know, coming back to my, you know, my earlier point, it is practically impossible for those who want to comply to know what's required of them anyway. And that is, I think, largely driving the renunciations of citizenship.
Just going back to the accidental Americans, where we came in, by the way, there is one important point about the born abroad accidentals. As you'll know, that way back, those born abroad accidentals would have lost their US citizenship if by the age of 28, they hadn't lived in America for a required period of time. It was 5 years and then it became two. So when people were losing this accidental citizenship, if you like, by the time they were 28 at the latest, the problem sort of cured itself, because at that point they rid themselves of the American tax germ, even though they probably didn't know it. Well, that was repealed in 1978. So these types of accidental Americans are now caught for life, whereas before they would have been out of it in their 20s. So that was a sort of important change. The America probably thought they were doing them a big favor by doing away with this requirement.
That is exactly right. And, that was the result of intense lobbying by various groups of Americans abroad. But to that, I would add the 1967 decision of the Supreme Court of the United States in a case called Euphorium, which basically held that the statute in the Immigration Nationality Act that automatically stripped people of their citizenship was unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And what has happened is this, that the law of citizenship has evolved over, say, the last 50, 60 years, all right, in a way that citizenship has become much, much harder to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, the Treasury regulations that define individual for tax purposes have continued to use the word citizen. Have understood that to essentially follow nationality laws, right? So the nationality laws, in many ways, have evolved to create more U.S. citizens. Well, if we look on the tax side over the last 60 years, the tax reporting and income requirements have become hugely and astronomically more complex and more punitive.
Yeah.
Back to the taxation of Americans abroad, the PFIC regime, for example, the whole CFC, the subpart F type of stuff that, the subpart F, although it's old, actually is from 1962. It's really been the perfect storm here.
Yeah. And it's not over.
No, I don't think it's over. Where do you think it's likely to go?
Well, I think, as I understand it, I haven't been following it quite so closely recently, but as from the 1st of January this year, aren't the IRS tightening up on requiring foreign financial institutions to report on their Americans? So more living abroad Americans, I think, are going to find that they're suddenly getting letters from their bank or whatever, asking if they're American, and if they are, would they kind of like to move on, as it were? So I think
that seems to be the case. So what that is a basically under the, as I understand it, leaving aside all the complexity and the details, one of the requirements under the FATCA IGAs was the bank's report of the tax identification number, which is a U.S. Social Security number.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and to the extent that people either don't have or unwilling to give a U.S. Social Security number, then they create a problem for the bank. And
that's the point, yeah.
Maybe send packing. That has been played out differently in different countries.
Mm.
What we see is, I would say the Netherlands is at the height, in the eye of the storm there. Particularly now that we have this court decision that says, absolutely, the U.S. FATCA law is the law of our country and one must obey it. And, and again, we're coming back to how these U.S. laws impact the economies and I would say sovereignty of other countries.
Mm.
I mean, would you think that it's a clear infringement on the sovereignty of a country for the U.S. to define who can and cannot have a bank account in that country?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, the whole thing impinges on sovereignty, and that's the level at which it needs to be tackled. I mean, it can't really be tackled at the judicial level because courts simply have to apply the law as it is. So these decisions don't come as a great surprise to me. So it's really at governmental level that this needs to be tackled, and it needs to be a coordinated effort, maybe through the OECD, where countries, you know, really get up front with America and say this is not acceptable. But whether they'll ever do that is another question.
Well, what do you think? I mean, I think they have. I think that, you know, from my perspective, if they want to retain their sovereignty, I think they have to do it. Because every year this goes on, it's more encroachment on their sovereignty.
Yeah, it's a continuing encroachment on their sovereignty, which they should not be very happy about. But America being the big kid on the block, they probably regard it as not the most important thing on their agenda, these other countries.
So they're willing to sacrifice their citizens?
Up to that point, I would say, yes, they are, because whilst they are their citizens, they are, like it or not, they are also citizens of the US and therefore owe certain obligations to the US as well. So I think that's a point that people who are in this situation do have to recognize, that what one sometimes sees the expression who are considered by the US to be their citizens. Well, it's not that they're considered, they are actually their citizens, whether they like it or not. And they've got to tackle their personal problems from that point of view, it seems to me. So there's got to be an acceptance that you are a US citizen.
Well,
deal with it from there.
Yeah, okay. So though, you know, we talk about, for example, your children who have the impression acknowledge their dual citizenship-ness.
Were. They did acknowledge it, yes.
They're out as well?
They're out.
Interesting.
Well, you see,
this was family expatriation?
Sorry?
So this would have been one of these family expatriations?
Well, in what sense? Sorry.
All U.S. citizen members of your family renounced.
Yes. Yeah, over a period of time. I mean, take, for example, my son's situation. It could well be that at some point in his life, he will run his own company that would have been defined as a controlled foreign corporation, which would not be ideal, would it?
Well, so, I think it would be impossible.
Yeah, well, I think that's the right word. So they had as many personal financial reasons for finding it difficult as my wife did. So we all saw
it. In their case, was it that when they were born, they were brought to the U.S. Embassy or whatever, were issued a certificate of birth abroad?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, of course, it was seen as an asset in those days.
Right. Do you think that, one of the problems here, it seems to me, is it's one thing for these citizenship by descent laws to be interpreted, well, you know, you have the right to U.S. citizenship if you want to activate it, so to speak, you know, come on down to the embassy. I wonder if as a matter of international law, I don't know the answer to this, but I think it's a question worth asking. If a country can forcibly impose its citizenship on somebody born outside the country who doesn't want it?
Well, as I think I've already mentioned, pretty much every country in the world does something along those lines. So it seems that it is generally accepted under international law that is legitimate. And in fact, it is advantageous in principle, it seems to me. Other countries don't impose this citizenship taxation. That's where the problem arises. It's not the citizenship by descent that's the problem. And in fact, I imagine that there are cases, probably more than a few, where that saves people from being stateless.
Well, that is in part the rationale for it, absolutely.
Yeah, so... Absolutely. So.
But what you're saying again is that the problem is, you know, the U.S. defining people who live in other countries as their own tax residents. So that's the problem.
Yeah. And
if we look at the state of all of this today, so to speak, right, we have, you know, different groups working on this from different perspectives. We have, for example, the Accidental Americans who launched this lawsuit against the State Department over the renunciation fee. We have, you know, this thing in the UK, the FATCA thing, which I think is referred to as Jenny's mm-hmm. lawsuit. We have in Canada a case that's now in the Federal Court of Appeal over the constitutionality of the government of Canada signing this thing with the United States.
Mm.
You know, these are all different ways of attacking this problem that are dependent on you know, what legal mechanisms may be available in a certain country. But really, the one thing that runs that is the root of this, that runs through every single one of these things, is the citizenship taxation issue, right?
That is the issue. That's what needs to be focused on to me. And it needs to be focused on at a government level.
Well, I think it needs to be focused on all levels, but yeah, on the government level. So in other words, now the question the government should be asking is not this ridiculous, can the U.S. define who its citizens are? Can the U.S. have what tax policy it wants? The question is, should the United States be able to export that tax policy other countries and apply to people who live in other countries? Would that be a reasonable way to put it?
Yeah, yeah. That is the issue. And there have actually been some people in the EU Parliament, goodbye EU, I should say, but there's some people in the EU Parliament who have tried to raise these issues, but it doesn't really get any traction across the board.
Why?
Because, again, people don't see it as a big issue. They don't want to upset America. They have more important things to deal with America on. And you can see it from their point of view, you have to say.
But you know, as long as this goes on, it cannot get better, right? It's worse and worse, a continuing infringement on the sovereignty of other countries. You know, it seems to me that there needs to be agreement on what the issue is.
Yeah.
And when we have government saying, well, the issue is U.S. citizenship rules, which I think we agree it is not.
No.
Or the issue is U.S. tax rules, which we agree the issue is not.
Yeah.
Or the issue is FATCA, which we agree the issue is not. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the issue is, can the United States export this system of taxation to other countries?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a separate issue. And, you know, maybe you can become the pioneer in sort of institutionalizing that as the issue, Peter.
Well, am I too old for that, John, do you think?
There could be no more noble project for your retirement.
You're probably right. You're probably right. I'll give that some thought.
Anyway, listen, this has been a fantastic discussion. I really enjoyed this chat today.
Sure, so am I.
And let's do this again.
Yeah, delighted.
Thank you so much. And how long do you think London's going to be in lockdown anyway?
Well, gosh, it's very difficult to say, isn't it? I mean, I think several more weeks anyway. I'm keeping my head down.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably the safe thing to do on that. I thank you very much. And I've been speaking here today with Peter, and I think we'll leave it at Peter for the moment, who is a retired London, UK-based lawyer who obviously has been conscripted into this fight and problem for the sole reason of marrying an American and having children who became U.S. citizens. So it's interesting how this, we haven't talked about how it extends into the family, but it's pretty obvious that it does. So thank you very much for this conversation today.
Okay. My pleasure. My pleasure. Good luck in Toronto.
Thank you.